there that would explain everything. I try not to think too hard about the incredible women I had passed over because of a fear it took me too long to understand. I try not to dwell on this too much. If you spend too much time looking in the rearview mirror, you will crash your car. Still, I do find myself longing for a companion, a romantic one. I'm not picky, about 5'2", brunette, smart as a whip, funny, mostly sane will do, loves kids, tolerates hockey, willing to learn pickleball. That's all I ask. A teammate. Eventually, if I stare long enough, I watch as my face starts to disappear, and I know it's time to head out to my patio and my view. Out there, below the bluffs and the freeways and the meditation center where I read my list to my sponsor, out there where the California gulls swirl and swoop, I watch the ocean ripple, slate gray with edgings of blue. I've always thought that the ocean mirrors the subconscious mind. There's beauty, coral reefs, brightly colored fish, spume, and refracted sunlight. But there's something darker, sharks and tigerfish and endless deeps just ready to swallow rickety fishing boats. Its size is what most calms me. Its size and its power. Big enough to get lost in forever. Strong enough to hold up great oil tankers. We are as naught compared to its vastness. And have you ever stood on the water's edge and tried to stop a wave? It goes on, regardless of what we do, regardless of how hard we try. The ocean reminds us that we are powerless in comparison. Watching the ocean, I find myself most days filled with not just longing, but also peace and gratitude and a deeper understanding of just what I've been through and where I am now. For a start, I've surrendered, but to the winning side, not to the losing. I'm no longer mired in an impossible battle with drugs and alcohol. I no longer feel the need to automatically light up a cigarette to go with my morning coffee. I notice that I feel cleaner, fresher. My friends and family have all mentioned it. There's a brightness about me that none of them had seen before. In the appendix, The Spiritual Experience, at the end of AA's big book, I read this. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. This morning, and every morning, out there on the patio, I am as the newcomer. I'm filled with, energized by, the differences. No drink, no drugs, no cigarettes. As I stand there, coffee in one hand and nothing in the other, and watch the distant waves in the ocean, I realize that I'm feeling a wave of my own inside me. Gratitude. As the light of day deepened and the ocean changed from silver to palest aqua, the wave of gratitude grew until within the wave I saw faces and events and little bits of flotsam that had been moments in my eventful life. I was so grateful to be alive, to have a loving family. This was not the least of it, and perhaps the best thing of all, in fact. There in the water's thin spray, I saw my mother's face and thought about her ineffable ability to step up in a crisis, to take charge and make things better. Keith Morrison once said to me, "During all the 4 decades I have been with your mom, her incredible attachment to you has been the central part of her life. She thinks about you all the time." Way back in 1980, when things got serious between us, she said something I've never forgotten. "No man will ever come between Matthew and me. He'll always be the most important person in my life. You'll have to accept that." And it's true. There was never a moment I didn't feel that love. Even in our darkest moments, if something is really wrong, she is still my first call. I saw my father's ridiculously handsome face, too. and it seemed appropriate that I saw him both as my father and as the Old Spice sailor guy, though that last image had long faded to a distant point on the horizon. I think about them withstanding being in the same room together when I was really sick and what kind of love that betrays. They didn't belong together. I get that now. So I'd like back all the coins I've dropped into wells, wishing that they were together. They both got lucky and married the people they were supposed to be married to. My sister's faces shadow my parents, as does my brother's, each of them beaming at me, not just at a hospital bedside, but also in Canada and Los Angeles, as I tried to crack them up with my patter. They never dropped the ball once. Any of them. Never turned their backs on me, ever. Imagine such love if you can. Less profound, but no less thrilling, images gurgled up from the roiling waters, the LA Kings winning the Stanley Cup in 2012, me in row 7 screaming at the second line to keep up the pressure on the boards, and my rather selfish thought that God made them wind through the playoffs in a year when they only made the playoffs in the last days. I had just ended a very long relationship, and I'm quite sure the Kings went all the way because God said, "Hey, Maddie, I know this is going to be a hard time for you, so here's something that will last 3 months and give you a tremendous amount of fun and distraction to make it better." Boom! It did. After charging through the playoffs like revenging angels of death, it was the Kings over the Devils in 6 in the finals. And that last game at the Staples Center, a blowout in a Stanley Cup game unlike any in 2 decades. LA up 4-0, just a minute into the second period. I was at every game, even flying myself and some pals to the games on the road, too. As the ice rink of my sports fandom slips back under the water, more faces appear. The Murray brothers, my dearest, oldest friends, with whom I created a funny way of talking that eventually touched the hearts of millions. Craig Bierko, Hank Azaria, David Pressman. How their laughter once was the only drug I needed. But I would never have met them or gotten anywhere, perhaps, without Greg Simpson casting me in my very first play. You never know where one thing will lead. I guess the lesson is take every opportunity because something might come of it. Something huge came of it for me. I closed my eyes, then inhaled deeply, and as I opened my eyes, I was surrounded by my friends, without whom I would have starred in something called No Friends. Schwimmer for making us stick together when he could have gone it alone and profited more than all the rest, and deciding we should be a team and getting us $1 million a week. Lisa Kudrow, no woman has ever made me laugh that much. Courtney Cox, for making America think that someone so beautiful would marry a guy like me. Jenny, for letting me look at that face an extra 2 seconds every single day. Matt LeBlanc, who took the only sort of stock character and turned him into the funniest character on the show. Each of them was still just a phone call away. At the reunion, I was the one who cried more than anyone because I knew what I'd had, and the gratitude I felt then matched the gratitude I feel today. Beyond those principles, there was all the crew, the producers, the writers, the actors, the audience members, so many faces churning into one face of joy. Marta Kaufman, David Crane, and Kevin Bright, without whom Friends would have been a silent movie. Could this be any more of a silent movie? The fans, so many fans who stuck with it and still watch, their faces peer back at me now, mute as God, as though I'm still on stage 24 in Burbank. Their laughter, which for so long gave me purpose, echoes still up the canyon sides, almost reaching me all these years later. I think about all the sponsors and sober companions and doctors who helped me to not screw up the greatest job in the world. I look out at the water, and I say very quietly, maybe I'm not so bad after all. And then I head back in for more coffee. In the house, I find Erin. She's always there when I need her. I don't tell her what I've been thinking about out there, but I can see in her eyes she has an idea, maybe. She doesn't say anything because that's what best friends do. Erin. She saved my life at the rehab when my insides exploded, and she's saved it every day still. Who knows what I'd do without her? I intend to never find out. I can tell she's itching for a cigarette, but she doesn't break. Find a friend who'll quit something with you. You'll be amazed what that does for a friendship. Now the sun is higher, the perfect Southern California day almost at its prime. Way off in the distance, I can see boats. And if I squint, I can see surfers lounging in the calm waters. Still, this gratitude swirls about me, even stronger now as more faces appear. Characters from the Woody Allen movies I love, the TV show Lost, Peter Gabriel, Michael Keaton, John Grisham, Steve Martin, Sting, Dave Letterman, for having me on for the first time. Barack Obama, the smartest man I have ever spoken to. On the breeze, I hear the piano version of New York, New York by Ryan Adams, recorded at Carnegie Hall on November 17, 2014. I realize all over again that I'm so lucky to have been in this business, to have had not just access to extraordinary people, but to have also been able to affect people the same way something like Don't Give Up by Peter Gabriel affects me. Let's not discuss the video with him hugging Kate Bush. It's almost too much to bear. When I think about all the actors who take chances, I get a flash of Earl H., the good version, not the bad. And quickly it's replaced by the face of my current sponsor, Clay, who has talked me down so often. I think about all the doctors and nurses at the UCLA Medical Center for saving my life. I am no longer welcome in that hospital for getting caught smoking in there one last time. To Carrie Gaynor for making sure there was never going to be one last time. And behind them all, the specter of Bill Wilson, whose establishment of AA has saved millions upon millions of lives one day at a time, whose organization still refuses to shoot the wounded and always lets the light in for me. I was grateful for dentists. No, wait, I hate dentists. Somewhere behind me, farther up the hill, I catch the hint of the sound of children laughing, my favorite sound of all. I pick the pickleball paddle up off the patio table and do a few practice swings. Until recently, I'd never heard of pickleball, never thought I'd be well enough to play any kind of sport again. I'd long since stopped swinging a tennis racket, but this new Maddie now actually looks forward to afternoons at the Riviera hitting the bright yellow plastic pickleball. My reverie is interrupted by Erin. Hey, Maddie, she says from the kitchen door. It's Doug on the phone. Doug Chapin has been my manager since 1992. And like many people in this business, he has often waited patiently as I dug myself out of whichever hole I was in. To finally be able to work again? To be able to write? Who knew such things were possible? My eyes fill with tears now. The sea seemed farther away, like a dream. So I close my eyes and feel such gratitude for all that I have learned in this lifetime, for the scars on my stomach, which just proved I'd live a life worth fighting for. I was grateful that I was able to help my fellow man in times of strife and struggle, and what a gift that was. The beautiful faces of women flash across my retina, the wonderful women who have been in my life. And I am thankful again for them animating me and pushing me to be the best man I can be. My first girlfriend, Gabrielle Bober, was the one who pointed out that something was wrong with me and sent me to rehab for the first time. the beautiful, magical Jamie Tarsus, for not letting me disappear. Tricia Fisher for starting it all, for Rachel's face, for the nurse in New York who was a bright, shining light during one of my darkest times. I'm even grateful to the woman who dumped me after I'd opened myself up. And I'm so grateful for all the wonderful women whom I had broken up with simply because I was afraid. I'm grateful and sorry. Oh, and available. I would not bring fear-based mistakes into my next relationship, whenever that may be. I know that much. The sun, at its highest, it's time to head back inside to the shade. I hate leaving that view. I'm not sure anyone could quite ever know what a view like that means to me. An unaccompanied minor no more, when I float above the world like that, about to be parented once again. Life keeps moving. Each day is an opportunity. Now, a chance for wonder and hope and work and forward motion. I wonder if the A-list actress who has expressed strong interest in my new screenplay has said yes yet. As I step inside, I pause on the threshold. My life has been a series of these portals. Between Canada and L.A., Mom and Dad, LAX 2194, and friends. Between sobriety and addiction, despair and gratitude, love and losing love. But I'm learning patience, slowly acquiring the taste for reality. Sitting back down at the kitchen table, I dig into my phone to see who's called. Not the A-list actress, but there's time. This is how life is now, and it's good. I look over at Erin and she smiles at me. Being in a kitchen always brings to mind God. He showed up to me in a kitchen, of course, and in doing so saved my life. God is always there for me now, whenever I clear my channel to feel his awesomeness. It's hard to believe, given everything, that he still shows up for us mortals, but he does, and that's the point. Love always wins. Love and courage, man. The most important things. I don't move forward with fear anymore. I move forward with curiosity. I have an incredible support group around me, and they save me every day. Because I've known hell. Hell has definable features, and I want no part of it. But I have the courage to face it, at least. Who am I going to be? Whoever it is, I will take it on as a man who has finally acquired the taste for life. I fought the taste, man. I fought it hard. But in the end, admitting defeat was winning. Addiction, the big terrible thing, is far too powerful for anyone to defeat alone. But together, one day at a time, we can beat it down. The one thing I got right was that I never gave up. I never raised my hands and said, "That's enough, I can't take it anymore, you win." And because of that, I stand tall now, ready for whatever comes next. Someday, you too might be called upon to do something important, so be ready for it. And when whatever happens, just think, what would Batman do? And do that. This is Matthew Perry. Thank you for listening to this production of Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing, a Macmillan audio production for Flatiron Books. This title was produced and directed by Guy Oldfield. Recorded and engineered by Peter Lipinski at Lime Studio, Santa Monica. Post-production by Tim Franklin. Text copyright 2022 by Matthew Perry. Production copyright 2022 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.